liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Butcher.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday, and I hope you can hear me over the chiming grandfather clock. Today is Wednesday, the 5th of July in the year 2006. And I'll begin here with our spiritual message, as we always do. And this, once again, is from A Course in Miracles, from the workbook, page 7777. The presence of fear is a sure sign that you're trusting in your own strength. That's something to think about. The presence of fear is a sure sign that you're trusting in your own strength. And Alan Watt is with us this evening, folks. And Alan, thanks for being here and welcome again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you. And what is up with you? And we, I don't know, I think our listeners are aware that we don't pre-plan the radio broadcasts that we do together, the conversations that we have.
Mm-hmm. We're unlimited and corporated.
Non-incorporated.
Yeah, and non-scripted.
Yeah, non-scripted for sure.
Uh-huh.
So how's it been with you, and is there anything particular that you want to talk about tonight? Anything that special that might be on your mind?
I think we've touched on the fact before that so much of what we're living through is pre-planned so long ago by, you know, bigger authorities. And I've always been astounded as to the outlets that are allowed for the ones who are waking up. So they go looking for outlets to see what's really going on. And of course, for many, many years, it was just the shortwave radio that was big on this sort of patriot type thing. They did give out a lot of stuff that wasn't on the mainstream, but it always mixed it with other agendas.
Yes.
Or religion, you know. And quite a few years ago in the Toronto Star, there was a write-up on how the American civilian shortwave was set up. Now, that's not the same as the ham radio. It's the official shortwave versions like the BBC. And they said that in America they were set up at the beginning of the Cold War by the CIA to give out propaganda against communism. And so they had Christian fronts to do it. And I don't think that power has ever been relinquished, to be honest with you. Because on the shortwave, you'll find, and I've always found this, every one of the talk show hosts hits the same topic at the same time, as though that was going round. So there's got to be a communication between them to make them all go for the same things at the same time.
A lot of times I think, for example, if there's a particular, quote, guest that has information,
uh-huh,
they contact the shortwave talk show host.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, the same person is on, well, this is, you've told me this, the same guest is on everywhere.
Yeah.
But are you saying, too, that not only with the guest, but with just the agenda or the
the
content?
It's the old story. You always give the public a superhero to guide them. And the way this plan or game has always been played is that they literally plan the future like a war strategy. And we are the battlefield, planet Earth. And since they want to do this, and this in the next 100 years or whatever, they also employ all lots of think tanks, and this is known, this is not guessing, think tanks to work on every angle of response of the public. And so they'll say, well, there'll be certain groups will form to fight this, and certain groups will form against that. So they put out in advance well-informed people to start those groups off. And that way, that's why they always go around in circles and never really do much.
And planet Earth is the battlefield.
Oh, it is.
It takes my mind immediately back to the Old Testament.
Uh-huh.
I had an email from a man who read the book, Jewish Persecution, that's online,
mm-hmm.
although it was posted at another website, and he was a person that sounded to me as though he was listening
uh-huh.
to that voice within, if you would, that whatever we would call it. But he said that when he was reading the Old Testament, he said he just, when he read about all of the wars that Jehovah was commanding and the Israelites to
uh-huh.
go into every town and utterly destroy everything that breathes.
Uh-huh.
Well, people who believe that that Bible is the holy and divinely inspired word of God, every jot and tittle,
uh-huh.
including all of the contradictions,
mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you think that wars to them are like, well, it's just part of this earth?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, wasn't that a good conditioning beginning, Alan?
Yeah. Yeah, people who believe in things literally like that, many of them do, they're very base. They're very basic people. They're off the earth, you might say. They're very base people. And, of course, that's part of the whole mystery of religion itself. And the reasons they give exoteric religions for the general public. A government in the old days, when you had kings and queens, well, it used to be represented by the king or the queen. And
well, would you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, government in times gone by was really the king or the queen.
Oh, sure.
And they represented the God on earth.
Right. Well, the divine right to rule.
Yeah. And King James made many speeches about that. His right to whatever he did was all right because, you know, God had put him first above all other people. And he had the place of acting as God on earth. And this was traditional stuff. Today it's more complicated because of the myriad of bureaucracies and levels of government. But it was always to do with not so much. This is the modern concept, but they'll tell you in the modern times for democracies, government's concern is always to see how much freedom they can allow you to have without going overboard and losing control.
Oh, you mean how little freedom?
Yeah.
They can allow us to
have. It seems to be a lot until you really sit down and think of all the things you have to do to please them. But in days gone by, they didn't even have a pretense of that. They never thought about how much freedom to give the public. So this has been going on for thousands of years. So religions were given for that type of earth rulership, the material world.
Exactly.
Of a pecking order living on the bulk of the people. And it's true enough. If it wasn't for money, none of this could exist.
Right.
They're building projects. You know, the Masons love building projects, building societies, building bridges between countries, all that kind of stuff. Without money, they couldn't get the public to build and work towards their system.
And they wouldn't be able, as you have said so many times, and I think it always bears repeating, without money there could be no standing armies.
None.
Because armies have to be paid.
Yeah.
And what would happen if it were happening naturally, if there was a group of people that formed a type of community, like the ancient people,
mm-hmm.
And they were being attacked, the people who were defending
mm-hmm.
their families and their homes, such as they were, would not need to be paid.
Oh, absolutely.
And that would be the only time. If there was an aggressive clan or something that was traveling around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. So once you get money, then you can get a standing regular army, a full-time army, that's dedicated to nothing except the military.
Well...
And conquest.
Conquest and control over the people
mm-hmm.
within that, quote, government or that territory or that state.
Yeah. And again, people too tend to propaganda, fairly recent propaganda too, in the last 100 years. They tend to think of armies as there to defend you against someone over there, but the history of Europe that I hope is never forgotten is that the standing army generally was always used on its own public.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Internal control.
Uh-huh, yeah. And armies are just composed of mercenaries because they don't get forced into joining, they volunteer. And they get paid to do whatever they're told to do, and they no longer belong to the public. Technically, their bodies are not even there.
I was going to say, right, not belong to the public.
Uh-huh.
They no longer belong to themselves.
That's right. They're privately owned, so they become private.
And they wear dog tags, Alan.
A dog tag. Yeah.
That just, you know, that's something that never occurred to me.
Well, you'll find that
until
in Shakespeare. You know, Shakespeare. Wrote about it. Winston Churchill used to quote that phrase.
What?
In his speeches, let loose the dogs of war.
The dogs of war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's this is an old term used for them. Yeah. Yeah. And even the old naval language they used, they'd often call them sea dogs, you know. And you old dog, they call them dogs.
And backwards, that would spell God.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And backwards, God spells dog.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even like using that word anymore.
Yeah, I know. But this is an old, old system. And so all the tribute is given to mythical characters. No doubt there was some beginning somewhere. We'll never know the truth of it. But in some versions in the Babylonian tradition, they had the beginning with Nimrod, who was the builder of cities. And a city is the first artificial creation. It's an unnatural creation because it can't even support itself. It has to introduce a money system to exchange for goods. The goods must be brought into them. You can't barter in the city. There's only so many turnips you can pass around for your rent, you know?
Right.
So therefore, they'd have money. So money and a city go together. And then once you have the money in place, then you can create the standing army. And that's what they did. They've often conquered rural areas and forced them to take money. And then that way they could take it back from them in taxes, which represented their labor, basically. And of course, in the Hebrew type version, or whenever it was written, I think it was much later, to be honest, but Cain was the same character. Cain, in that version, because they all had a different name for the same thing, but Cain was the first artificer who made weapons and metal, the first builder, and so on, whereas the Babylonians had their Nimrod.
Same, in other words, just the same alleged person with a different name.
That's right. So it all goes back to the beginning of a system, and that's the key to it, is a system. A system which uses money, uses commerce, it does away with barter, and because everyone eventually gets on the money system, and then the people that are easily controlled start working for money rather than food or for what they need.
Right, well, and since it is the system under which we struggle today,
uh-huh.
As you've said, I mean, you say we shouldn't even be using money or,
yeah.
You know, and there's no way that money can be used for good. I don't particularly, that doesn't ring true for me because, given that money is the means of exchange.
Now the means, yeah.
Yeah, well, now, because, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't believe that everybody that has money would necessarily not use it for good. It's an individual thing, and I do understand that probably the majority of people who have a lot of money are people who strove and strove and strove because money meant everything to them.
Yeah,
and those would be the ones.
Government seems to inherit the previous government and the same system. in the same place, so people go into government. And so money to them is a tool.
Right.
It's really a tool, which is used by those who own it and control it, because we then work for them, make for them those very things, those agendas, even the weaponry which they use on us. We pay for that through the money that they take back in taxes. And then they can even employ us, in fact, to work and make their weaponry for them. And so that's the key to that.
Mm-hmm.
As long as there's that streak of craving for power within society, you'll always have that weapon industry
right.
going on.
And there are exceptions to that rule.
Mm-hmm. But
you'll
never get exceptions on a general level. Those who seek power in government
right.
have the same problem.
Well, they have the same personalities, don't they?
They do, and that's why you
same lack of character.
Don't even try to get into government.
Right.
And if they do, they can't get in because they're not allowed in. You have to join the club to get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had one politician who joined the state or provincial government in Queen's Park, and he wrote a book about his experiences. He says first they tried to bring him in like an old boy. Here's what really happens, and this is the real world here. And he saw the perks and how they help themselves and all the rest of it. And of course the whole idea is to get you to simply go along and join them and do the same kind of things. And when you didn't do that, then they all together turned against them.
Oh, absolutely.
Tried to turn them up.
Absolutely. And it just, that probably same thing has always been happening, and of course it still is today.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking of Wes Cooley, a
uh-huh.
congressman from Oregon. I've mentioned him before.
Yeah.
Wes was a state legislator, I think a senator, and was elected at that time mainly by grassroots. That's before vote scam was so totally prevalent. But Wes was one of those people.
Yeah.
And he was on the air with me, and I had many conversations with him. No, I don't think I ever brought Wes on the air. I met him because I got an email that said, please, can you help him?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not getting involved in anything. I don't know this man. And then so he called me, and while we were talking, his wife was faxing me data, government papers, the whole thing. And that's the one thing Wes wouldn't do. Directly when they got there, their orientation, the Republicans went to one place, the Democrats went to another.
Yeah.
And they were at the Heritage Foundation, or this orientation was set up
uh-huh.
by the president of the Heritage Foundation. And when they were asked to stand up and say something about themselves and who they were, and Wes got up and he said who he was, why he was there, and he didn't like what was going on.
Yeah.
He said, I believe that this is a brainwashing session.
Yes.
And I believe that our colleagues on the other side of the aisle are undergoing the same thing right now.
Uh-huh.
And this guy's name, the president of the Heritage Foundation, is escaping me for the moment. But anyway, he said, well, we should have lunch. And he said, yeah, I'll have lunch with you, but I still mean what I said.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did go to lunch with the guy, he told Wes, he said, you're older than most of the freshman congressmen, and because of that, he said, you will be able to climb the political ladder quickly.
Yeah.
And you will be assigned a seat on committees. And Wes said, I'm not here. Please excuse that. I'm sorry. He said, I'm not here to climb a political ladder. I'm here because I don't like what's happening to our country through the government. And I might be only here for one term, but whatever, he said, I am here to do whatever I can to turn that around. And Wes Cooley was run out of office and shamed and almost went to prison, which the man was in his early 60s. He was actually charged with falsifying information on his campaign pamphlet.
Yeah.
And so there were double charges for the primary and then the regular election.
Yeah.
And it was going to cost this man $250,000 and possibly 10 years in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Weyrich, Mr. conservative American was the one behind the push to get him out.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go.
Yeah.
And there was no doubt with all of the information she sent me, I knew that, and besides with our conversation,
mm-hmm.
When he mentioned Paul Weyrich, it was Paul Weyrich that was at that meeting.
Yeah.
I said, Paul Weyrich? He says, you know him? I said, I know who he is. And I said, oh, my God. And not only that, he wouldn't go along with the, not the Republican agenda, nor the, the Democratic. And it was one of the Green movements. I forget what it was. It was some bill, environmental thing. He wouldn't vote for it. And he wouldn't go along with either crowd, basically. And that's what happened to him.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't mess around.
Oh, no, they don't.
And that's the real world again. It's the real world. That's how it really is. And it's the same in every country. And if you look at how people start off to get into politics, they're told when they're maybe 20 or so to start, or even before university, start off with social groups and discussion groups. Then they go into voluntary chair members of charity works.
Mm-hmm.
Drug rehab places, any kind of board they can join,
yeah.
to get their resumes built up, and they don't care. They don't care what board they're on, and they literally go from one to the next in the course of a day, one after another, just to build up their resumes.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just the format. Plus, you'll find at the top of each one of these chairing boards, the top person is usually a high mason, and everyone seems to understand instinctively, or they've been told, this is the man that makes or breaks you. He'll pass you or give you the thumbs
right.
down. And that's who you have to please when you join these voluntary boards that they go on. That's how the system starts off. So what you get are the ones who are compliant. They're quite happy to go along with everything. They watch the corruption just on the way up through the charity work, and they keep their mouths shut, and that's how they get up into politics.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, they don't try to, quote, buck the system.
That's it. That's it. So that's what you end up with basically psychopathic types that get up there.
For any of our listeners that just might be interested, well, I was talking about Wes Cooley, whatever happened to him, because I said he could have gone to prison.
Mm-hmm.
That was why I was contacted, was, please, can we find some people to be there at, that the court... the date that was set.
Mm-hmm.
And I put an email out on it, and evidently there were quite a few people there. I don't know that that had anything to do with it. Wes was found not guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But if he had been found guilty, it would have been, 10 years in prison for him.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that's the real world. That's how it works.
Yeah.
How it works. And it's the same with the bureaucracies. And our bureaucracies are unelected. They're generally third, fourth, fifth generation bureaucrats. They intermarry each other. They're brought up in the golden circle around their capital and introduced to each other. And you might even say the marriages are pretty well arranged or expected. At least that's what they generally call it, expected. You know?
Yeah.
And they themselves know when they go into their bureaucracy what their agenda will be generally for the rest of their life. And that's how the UN has worked since it was first signed, and before that the League of Nations.
Before that, the League to Enforce Peace.
Yeah, and the
Council
of Europe before that. You know, it's on and on and on. So this has been the same movement done through the ages to get us to where we're going, and it's done primarily by bypassing the politicians, who are always told to look the other way, and that's how you get by in politics. You know when to look the other way.
Yeah.
And the bureaucrats really do it all, you know.
You're getting back to, because I don't know if I completed my thought,
mm-hmm.
When I said that I had received an email from the gentleman that had read the book, and he mentioned, because I mentioned in the book, Jewish Persecution, it really needs a different title, but I mentioned about the Old Testament and Jehovah, and he said that when he read that, it something just didn't seem right. And when you mentioned previous to that, the people who do believe that are just their base,
mm-hmm.
I believe that there are a lot of people who read that, because after we began discussing it and talking about it on air, then I would hear from people, and maybe you probably, most probably, you did too, that said, you know, I always have had these questions. And another, but they're afraid to question because they're told that you may not question God. How dare you? And so they're actually, they're when they're reading it, Alan, and going, oh, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? Then they get scared that they're even questioning the divine.
Yeah. Which is the most perfect form of mind control.
Oh, gosh, of course it is.
Because you're then censoring yourself.
Of course. It is self-censorship.
Yeah.
Alan, it was like what happened to me that time I started reading Nest Webster's book on Germany and England. And she was mentioning the Bolshevik Jews in there. And, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry about this. I'm gonna ask the girls to let these dogs out. Molly is the house guard, and she looks out every window, and then starts probably the littlest bunny in just a minute here. I'm sorry. Would you put their collars on them and let them out? They're barking like crazy in there. Anyway, talking about self-censorship, so to speak, she was mentioning in this book, Germany and England, and for any of our listeners, it is at the website in the books online section, and I think it's also in How Wars Are Made behind the scenes. It was a small one. But when she mentioned Bolshevik Jews, Alan, I kind of thought, I gasped, and I thought, she sounds like an anti-Semite. And as I continued reading, I felt so confused, but I felt almost like I shouldn't even be reading this.
Uh-huh.
And I shared that with our listeners. I said, if you want to know how brainwashed we are, I was reading that book in the privacy of my own home and feeling uncomfortable and nervous about reading something negative about Jews.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So I've been there, done that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, in this world, if you want to think at all, you've got to be able to look at everything, including your own cultures.
Yeah.
And nothing can be taken for granted.
And your own.
Nothing, none of the norms.
And your own constitution that you would thought you would give your life to protect.
Or even the church that you were, you're the umpteenth generation of.
Yep.
When you look at the descendants of the Vatican and the slaughters they committed, you know, against many European peoples, and the Albigensian Crusades, you know, and the Cathars, they literally were like any other ultimate force. They used power and slaughter to keep people in line.
When you say Cathar, is that C-A-T-H-A-R?
Yeah.
Okay. I've been pronouncing it Cathar.
Yeah, well, they actually called it Cathari, you know.
Cathari?
With an I at the end.
Okay.
But,
and that was a warring group also?
No. The Cathars were a breakaway sect from religion, from Catholicism.
Okay, good. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
We have to take a 3-minute break here.
Yeah.
That I'd like you to just expand on that a little bit when we get back on the other side of this, okay?
Yeah.
And folks, we'll be back after this with Back with Alan, so do stay with us.
I pledge allegiance to the King of Kings and to his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven, one holy nation under the heavenly Father, with grace, mercy, and justice for all.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at firstamendmentradio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program. Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mined supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, we're back. Alan?
Yeah?
The Cathars?
Well, the Cathars, yeah.
Yeah. We talked about them a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And I've read, I don't know if it was Bijan's book or not, but you said that they disenfranchised themselves from the religion, from the church.
Yeah, they almost had a mirror image in some respects. They had their own hierarchy of bishops, and they had their own community areas or towns. They did have a sort of rite of confession at the end of life. That was the only time, I think, they had to confess.
Mm-hmm.
They believed this world was ruled by Satan.
Ah.
And a lot of them, there was a mixture of ex-Jews and ex-Catholics that had given up the religion, and so you had a mixture
mm-hmm.
of Kabbalah, early Kabbalah, not the full one that's finished centuries later. All of the Kabbalah wasn't complete then, but they had a form of that, and they had part of the esoteric teaching of the Old Testament that's not taught to the public. So the Catholic War went to war on them, and the Albigensians, the people just called them different names for the areas they lived in.
The Albigensians, the church warred against them, or the Albigensians?
The church warred against them and the Cathars.
Okay.
The Cathars and Albigensians were really just the same people in different areas, generally in parts of France or towards Spain.
Okay.
And some in the north of France and in the Languedoc area.
And were they pretty much slaughtered and scattered?
Yeah, the last crusade was against them. It wasn't against the Middle East.
Wow.
And even brought in the Knights Templars to take part in it. And the Knights Templars at that time had become basically the world's bankers. The only ones allowed to charge interest and not be taxed officially and permitted by the church. So so you had a lot of these big boys coming against them. But even though they were persecuted, you'll find a lot of people will hide behind persecution in history. And they didn't all get killed. Many of them escaped, I'm sure. And I noticed even in the last Winter Olympics held in France, in the particular area that was held, that was one of the Qatar regions. And they even had the dancers at the end dancing with tarot cards and this kind of thing, dressed up like tarot cards, because that was part of the religion in that area at one time. That's what they were referring to. So the Qatars did have a mixture of earlier Kabbalah and form of Christianity. They believe that Satan ruled the world, which is the Demiurgos. That is the truth behind in the esoteric. It was always understood.
Wait, say that word again, Demiurgos?
Yeah, the Demiurge from the Greek is the Lord of the world, the Lord of the physical. That's why the laws of the physical God or deity are always harsh and resolute. There's no real humanity in them because it deals purely with the world of the physical. And that's exoterically what the Old Testament would be for the West.
Uh-huh.
Every religion's got their version. Every people's got their own version. Even in China, they've had different versions. So the Cathars did not believe it was a favor to bring a soul into this world.
Uh-huh.
That was part of the religion. And they did become fairly wealthy, because they traded amongst themselves in the mountainous regions. They had their own rites, secret meetings, and they did have a form, supposedly according to the Catholic Church, of a mass orgy on certain high holy days, always in a place underground or inside caves in the mountains.
When you say orgy, are we talking sexual orgy?
Yeah.
Huh.
And that was part of that too. And so you're seeing rites and more of an esoteric understanding, which went all the way back to to Babylon, at least, probably pre-Babylon, of the esoteric meanings behind the exoteric religions that are given.
Mm-hmm.
They also had an upper priesthood called the Perfecti. But the secret of the Perfecti is that once you became perfected, then the God, and you're up there with the gods, then the rules that the gods make no longer apply to the Perfecti. So they could break all the laws that they gave to the people beneath them, which is very similar to the people who are running the world today.
The Cathars and Albigensians had these guys?
Yeah. And so the people beneath them had to follow all the rules, etc.
What were their rules? All physical world rules?
No, they were not to try and get so dearly attached to the physical world that they would become so ruthless and exploit one another, which is again of the law of the physical world in a monetary system. And so on the bottom, it was a good idea. Like most religions, in a sense, have all their good points too. But the electi, or the perfecti, who was above them, didn't have to follow those rules. And that's what came out when the Catholics went in, when the Church went in to investigate these ones called the perfecti. And if you look at the push towards global citizenship and the religions that they believe in, they all contain vast elements that came from the Cathar and Albigensian. They believe in reincarnation at the top of a special perfected soul that does not have to be here. And they have the right to rule on earth since they are here.
But they aren't spiritually based, in other words, or founded. In other words, was this perfecti, were they, you said they didn't have to follow the rules or the laws?
That was made for the people below.
Well, but were they bad people? I mean, did they misuse their position?
Well, it's almost that they didn't. Not only didn't have to follow it, they did the reverse of it.
Okay.
So they could accumulate wealth.
Okay.
They could dominate. They could exploit. So you have got, you have this dualistic, like all religions are dualistic, of course. And even when you take an esoteric part of it, it's still dualistic. So you got to understand this. I mean, you were talking about so much here in a few minutes. It's too much to give up to explain. But that this religion has so much to do for the perfect high class of the bunch that's running the world today.
So let me ask you this. Is it a possibility that they originally banded together for a good purpose? In other words, to get away from the dogma and doctrine and lies of the church, and could they have been infiltrated?
It's possible. On the other hand, rather than being infiltrated,
controlled opposition,
trying to rule it in the first place,
controlled
it to them.
I'm sorry, I'm talking over you.
Yeah.
So in other words, it was the controlled opposition too.
That could very well be.
If the perfect eye were the ones in charge right from the get-go, and they weren't the good guys, then you have to, what other assumption could we come to, Alan?
Yeah, it's similar to all Masonry, what we normally today call Freemasonry. If you look at the Mormon Church, you have two main classes. You have the ones who go to church and do what they're told, listen to the elders and marry who they're told, etc. And then you have the electi above them. Now, the electi are always male, and they get into the upper temple, and they are initiated into the same degrees as all Freemasons are.
There's a difference between electi and perfecti?
We're talking two religions here.
Oh, okay.
The perfecti, remember, were for the Albigensians.
And the electi?
And the electi are for the Mormons.
Oh, the Mormons.
But when you put them together, it's very, they're all very similar.
Same thing.
So there's always a secret group above that goes through rituals, and all Masonic rituals too. The same Masonic rituals.
So, in you know, the way it looks to me as you're explaining this, there were those who were listening, if you would. They weren't based. They didn't go along with the religion. And when the sleeping giant begins to awaken, then the elite say, uh-oh, got a problem here, and they just create their own opposition and control it. Same as Martin Luther.
Martin Luther was definitely put out there. However, that's your key to it. See, one power ruling over, and this is what's going to happen too if they were to get their way and have a world government, or they're called the World Corporation probably.
Sure.
Like they've had in movies. When you have no opposition, the public know who the enemy is. And after a long time, they start to disobey it in many different ways. And so if you create something that appears to attack your institution, it's strange that the public will actually go towards the government structure or the religious structure. So the Catholic Church needed an enemy to pull the people closer to them.
Because the people were getting restless.
They get restless, and when their religion is suddenly threatened, even if the people are grouching themselves about it, they'll still draw into it to protect it.
I see.
So they use this all down through the ages.
However, the controlled opposition serves a purpose too, because they separate out those who will not move in to protect their religion. They pull them out and control them in another way.
Yeah. Well, the Catholic Church used to go in with the Inquisition all through Europe. And the whole town would have to come out, or the village, and assemble in front of them. And then they would go into a dialogue with the people and say that. You know, first they'd terrify the hell out of them, generally an illiterate people. And they'd ask for people to volunteer if they've been involved in any witchcraft and this kind of thing. And many of them would suddenly come forward, knowing that if they volunteered first, all they had to do was to, even if they hadn't done anything, all you had to do was say, yes, I did, I saw someone on a broomstick or whatever, and then you had to ask for forgiveness, a penance, then you were free.
Okay.
But if you kept silent and said nothing, they wouldn't believe you.
They would torture you.
They'd torture you, yeah. Nothing changes because now they're torturing people for the U.S. and different places offshore. And then once you're tortured, you confess to anything.
Well, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So probably the majority of them that stepped forth weren't, but they knew what would happen if they did stay quiet.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's much easier to come forward en masse and all admit you've been involved in something.
Oh, sure. Uh-huh.
And do your penance and have it over and done with, and then you're free.
Well, and when you look at the purpose that Martin Luther served, Brandon, don't let her in. Do not let her in until I'm done, honey. Sorry, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
He served a wonderful purpose because for those who had it with the church, and what I recall was that was at around the time, I mean what I read,
mm-hmm.
that was at around the time when they were actually selling indulgences.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding of that is, you know, if you had committed a sin or something, all you had to do when the church representative came around is give them something, pay them,
mm-hmm.
and then your sins were forgiven.
Yes.
And they said that they took in so much money they actually had to rake the money up.
Oh, yes.
There was Martin...
But you could also pay it in installments.
Okay, or with a stein of beer.
Yes.
If they didn't have any money to give. And the people were saying, what the heck is going on here?
Yeah.
So there comes Martin Luther, and he nails the thing to the door and says, we're not going to take it anymore. And he was the opposition for the church, but they brought all of the lies into the protesters' churches, the Protestants.
They got the dialectic process going.
Yeah.
But you see, the Catholic Church has been created, really, this is the key to it. They've been created for an agricultural-based peoples run on feudalism. That was the key to it. Now, they knew that they had to, because the Great Plan was already in effect, you know, in the 1500s.
Yep.
They knew they had to change the world into a new system for a coming industrial area where science would take over and work towards the great work of perfecting all that was left imperfect. That's the whole world and everything in it. And so they had to create a new work ethic, and that's what you hear with Protestantism. It brought in what they called a work ethic. And sure enough, it brought in a new type of man who would stay at home at night and do his bookkeeping, and he'd be up there till midnight, and that was a good gentleman, you see, doing his figures and his sums and counting his money for investments. So that was the new era. Now, Martin Luther himself, his family crest, has three crosses and three roses on it. So it's a rose and cross, Rosicrucian.
Rosicrucian.
And that's the key to it as well. And the other key is the fact they could have either killed them or burned them or that's what they want.
And in Will Durant's book on during that era,
uh-huh.
he was very vivid in his writing. Martin Luther just stirred those people up to no end.
Yeah.
And then when they revolted, he said, hey, you need to do something with this crowd.
Well, he hated them up.
Yeah, he did.
He despised the ordinary person. He was an elitist himself.
Reformation, that's the book, Will Durant's book.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Luther definitely was an elitist. He did not believe that the ordinary man could understand the deeper mysteries. And shouldn't be given the power, you know. He believed that they should be kept in their place.
Yep, keep them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you look at the ones who brought the Protestantism into Scotland, like John Knox, who brought it in, that was all part of this Rosicrucian movement at the time. John Knox, like many others, had run off to Geneva for sanctuary, this early Rosicrucian Masonic type refuge. And then he came back when it was over and done with, and the Protestants had got in. So these characters helped push the Industrial Revolution, and the Catholics were left basically with the other countries that which are now called Third World, which are still basically rural and agricultural. So that was the whole thing with the Protestant movement. The new work ethic towards industry.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's a good argument, Alan,
uh-huh.
for not joining groups.
Yes.
And not labeling ourselves a, quote, Protestant, Baptist, Republican, Democrat, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
You don't. We don't need labels.
Yeah, I get asked sometimes, what are you? And people will...
What are you?
Yeah, they'll email me and they'll say, what are you, you know?
What is...
And are you this, that, or the other? And I say, no. I say, if you have a wall of pigeonholes, then all you'll have is the view of the entrance.
Yep.
You'll see nothing else for the rest of your life.
Uh-huh. Like the, Plato's cave?
Yeah.
And looking out of the pigeonhole?
A bit further, and I says, well, it depends what end of you is sticking out the pigeonhole.
Uh-huh.
You know? So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everyone wants to categorize you because they generally have put themselves in a box.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm back into a book that I began quite a while ago.
Uh-huh.
It's called God's Genes and Consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very interesting. But the author made a statement, and I want to share this, Alan. We don't have too much time left.
Uh-huh.
It's a simple statement, but you know how we've talked about the country versus the city, that cities are artificial, mm-hmm. and the countries, the country nature mm-hmm. is real. Is, in other words, in order to be able to make that spiritually consciousness, mm-hmm. the closer we are to nature, the closer we are to that. Mm-hmm. And he defined it this way. He said nature is the physical level of reality. Mm-hmm. Now, don't you think that's a good way to define that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It is the physical level of reality.
Uh-huh.
And I, because, you know, you and I have talked about this before. I could find myself very much in love with, if you would, the beauty. In fact, I would have to say that I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
I've told this before, that one day, that one spring, I was standing out in the big garden watering the bean sprouts coming up, mm-hmm. and just looking around at the beauty and the blue sky with no chemtrails in it and everything greening up, the meadows just rolling around before me. And I just said, oh, Father, thank you for this beauty that you have given us. And then I turned around and looked, and there was a rainbow in my spray that I was putting, yep. my hose. Mm-hmm. And the thought that occurred to me is, if this wasn't such a nasty place to be, mm-hmm. we might never want to go home, Alan.
That's right.
Because you feel that such an awe, in a sense, mm-hmm. of the beauty of nature.
Well, that leads it right back to what we're saying. The key to all corruption here is this plan to perfect all that which they claim was left imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what a boast. What an incredible...
arrogance.
And mad boast. Because there's nothing that you can look around and see in nature that doesn't boggle or stagger the mind
mm-hmm.
in its complexity. And it's all perfected already. And yet, even the scientists, they can find out ways to alter them. They still don't understand them. But they want to alter everything on this planet to make it more efficient, you see. Well, efficient for what purpose? Well, to serve their needs.
You know, the one thing I've thought about
mm-hmm.
in nature is that beasts eating beasts,
mm-hmm.
You know, the food chain.
Yeah.
And I wondered... the predators.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they're made to eat meat, so they kill.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes right on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And that almost looks... it looks or feels hideous to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see... I used to, you know, watch the Discovery Network.
Oh, yeah.
I don't subscribe to it anymore, but... it was so not nice to see the kills.
Uh-huh.
And I wondered if the world was perfect, let's say, if it was, that wouldn't have to be.
I think it's not even that. See, even that's trying to control. Nature was meant to be understood and accepted as it was.
Uh-huh. Do you think that was nature?
Yeah, there's no doubt that there's always been different kinds of animals fed in each other. And even the ones that eat grass are still eating grass.
I know.
Eating something.
I know.
However, the problem is when you have the deviancy creeps in. Animals know when they're filled, when they have been filled. They don't simply gorge themselves.
And they only kill to eat.
Yeah. And they don't do it for pleasure either. It's not they don't get a kick off of having power.
Right, thank you for that.
We're the only creatures that can happen too.
Uh-huh.
And so the problem definitely is within certain segments of society, certain individuals in society. And that's the problem. We have the psychopathic ones who must succeed in this particular moneyed system where when you have made it, to the top, you become a Donald Trump. You've conned, been cunning, you've outwitted all those around you, you've stabbed everybody in the back to get up. You're now called successful. This is what we're taught to worship. This kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's we're actually worshiping the psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem. From the city creation of ancient times to the present, the psychopaths can only but succeed in it because they use all kinds of cruelty and measures to get up there. Ordinary people don't want that kind of power. They don't want to walk over people or destroy them
right.
on the way up.
And those are the people that would never get in the positions
mm-hmm.
because they wouldn't walk over people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's our problem. And all the media, look at every magazine on the shelves, says worship the stars, worship the stars, the multi-millionaires. That's all we hear. Yeah. And that's what, unfortunately, what the public have been trained for. And that's why, over
yes.
the last so many years, we've been losing our conscience.
Losing our conscience.
Yeah.
That's losing our soul, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's what it is. Our hour went by very fast tonight.
Yeah, it did.
Yes, it did. And we've got about 40 seconds left. Give our listeners your website. Of course, they can link to it from sweetliberty.org.
Yeah, it's cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And there's 3 or 4 more shows going up there in the next couple of days.
Videos?
One of them's a TV station that's streaming now, in fact, at outdoor television.
Okay.
That was over 30-odd countries, I don't know.
That is wonderful. And they'll be going up today?
Tomorrow.
By tomorrow. Thanks, Alan. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
And folks, tune in Monday and Tuesday for Darren Reese. He does Sweet Liberty 2 nights a week, and I'm with you on Wednesday. And thank you for being here. We will see you next Wednesday. Good night. God bless you.
Who are you? That is the question and the name of the program. To learn what the question means and what the answers are, tune in every Sunday afternoon and Rice McLeod will give you the answers. Who are you? Check the schedule pages at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for broadcast times. We'll see you then. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free.